At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Welcome to The Bookmonger. I'm John J. Miller of National Review. Thanks for listening. This show is a production of National Review and a recording from the studio WRFH, the campus radio station of Hillsdale College. Our guest is Kimberly Strassel, author of The Biden Malaise, How America Bounces Back from Joe Biden's Dismal Repeat of the Jimmy Carter Years. Kim, welcome to The Bookmonger.
Hi, John. It's so great to be here.
Kim, the 1970s were half a century ago. Why do they and the Carter presidency remind you of right now?
Well, it's really remarkable, at least from the outward-facing view, how many things are similar between those two eras, which is remarkable, as you said, because it's 50 years. And yet we feel like there's this eerie echo in so many things, whether it's inflation, whether it's energy prices, whether it's foreign policy and increasingly aggressive adversaries abroad, whether it's immigration. A lot of people don't know this, but prior to Biden, the president who'd last had a major run on U.S. borders was Jimmy Carter with the Mariel boat lift in Cuba. And so there's just all these things that are similar, crime. And yet, one of the things that I point out in the book, which I just think is so important, is that this is like an unfair comparison to Jimmy Carter because, you know, he was handed a lot of the problems that he got. Joe Biden created his mess.
Carter also was a lot younger, and he was a governor. He was an outsider when he came to D.C.
Yep, he was only 52 versus Biden, who was obviously 78 when he came in, governed as an outsider. He was little known outside of Georgia. He was prickly the entire time he was in Washington. This is very different from Biden, who's never really done anything but work for the federal government and, you know, who is as insidery as they get.
Now, your book is called The Biden Malaise, and that word malaise, meaning a kind of general discomfort or uneasiness, that has a special meaning, doesn't it, that word?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what it meant back when Jimmy Carter was there is that the economy had become so bad. America's standing on the foreign stage had fallen so far that people had somewhat lost this idea, this notion of America as an exceptional place, as America that had a bright future. And I use that word specifically for this book, too, because I do feel there's an element of that today. People feel beat down from the pandemic that we had, from an economy that has just been ruthless to people's pocketbooks, their ability to pay for groceries, to pay for gas. You know, once again, we were humiliated in Afghanistan. We have an administration that doesn't seem to have a very well-articulated agenda for foreign policy. And we have a lot of division, which we also had in the 70s, too. And that, I do think, contributes to a certain American, I don't think it's ingrained, but a temporary fatalism about the direction that we're going.
So how do we bounce back from this? How did we do it in the 1970s when Jimmy Carter was president? How can we do it again?
Well, this is a huge message of the book, which is, as we're talking about comparisons between Biden and Carter, my message to conservatives and free marketers is you also have to remember what came after Carter. And what that was is that because of this malaise, because we had a president back then who didn't seem to know where he was headed or what he wanted and had created so many problems, there was an enormous backlash to that administration, and it created an opening which a very talented guy named Ronald Reagan came along and with a forceful message and with a sunny message managed to change not just one election cycle, but politics for a generation. And I believe firmly that conservatives have a similar moment facing them right now. There is a lot of discontent with Biden policies. There's a lot of depression a little bit about America's future. And if the right candidate comes along, someone that can articulate not just a very solid break with what we're doing now, but also a sunny, optimistic America, shining city on the hill approach, I think that there's a chance to not just bring back conservative voters and consolidate them, but to also bring in a lot of independents and others that are uneasy with this presidency.
Is that a big ask, Kim? I mean, part of what you're saying, I think, is let's go find a world historical figure of unique political ability to come in and save America. You know, it's easier said than done, I suppose.
Yeah, I get that. Right. Obviously, Reagan was absolutely unique. But I think that there are some certain things about Reagan that are absolutely able to follow any candidate is. And one, I think you have to have a candidate, my view, that somewhat forcefully rejects some of the Me Too populism that you see among a lot of Republicans right now, those who would sort of have us be a Democrat light policy when in terms of subsidies, et cetera, and so on. But I think it also as well, too, is optimism, the ability to smile. I mean, no one is ever going to be Reagan, but you can certainly come and have a sunny attitude about what is next to come in America. And right now, I just feel as though there's a really big emphasis among too many of the candidates who feel that all that matters is the fight. And yeah, you have to show the fight. But if you are going to base your campaign on suggesting that anyone who doesn't agree 100% with you is anti-American and antithetical to the cause, you're not going to pull people into a big tent.
Kim, I know you've heard the term zombie Reaganism. Some listeners might be thinking that term right now. Oh, here we go again, to borrow a Reagan term in a sense. Haven't times changed? Reagan was for the 80s. That was fine. But things are so different right now. There's no Cold War. There's big tech, which is completely new. There's new concerns about globalization and free trade. We don't need another Reagan. We need something new.
Well, first of all, I mean, sometimes when you have a good formula, it's worth keeping just because it works, okay? And look, I would say a couple of things about that. I absolutely agree with you that there are a lot of new challenges. But are those things that require the conservative movement to turn itself on its head? And the other thing I guess I would say is that, you know, if we're really looking for a party out there that's all about handouts from the government, simply except for our social causes, people who are going to tell Americans how they live their life. We already have a party that does that in Washington, D.C. It's called the Democratic Party. And no one in America no one in the Republican side is ever going to be as real deal as that. Okay. So if we're going to kind of pull back from the world and not show American leadership and, like I said, suddenly make it about how government we can make it so that we hand out more money to the policies that we prefer. We just can't compete on that stage, and we'll always get beat by them. What we do know, though, is that when you step back and you get government out of people's lives, it works. You know, it's interesting. When you look at what Trump did, he's running much more as a populist this time than he did back in his first run. But if you look at what made him so successful those years, they were all those zombie Reaganism policies that you're mentioning, okay? He cut regulation. He cut taxes. He took a more strong foreign policy, peace through strength. Formulas, if they work, let's not reinvent the wheel when the wheel works.
This is a message from our friends at American Habits from the State Policy Network. We the people. Do you ever think about what that means and what happened to it? We the people certainly did not mean an imperial city full of unelected bureaucrats deciding everything from kindergarten curricula to nursing home funding formulas. We the people means self-government, a free people deciding most things in their families and communities and delegating some authority to their towns and states while passing along just a small amount of that power to the national government. How did things get so upside down? At American Habits, we tell stories of real people with real solutions, all working to restore federalism and self-government. If you're a public official, Come get involved. If you're a citizen, come and see the new standard for American leadership. No matter who you are, come help us renew the forgotten but not lost habit of American self-government. Visit AmericanHabits.org to learn more. That's AmericanHabits.org.
Kim, setting aside Donald Trump, when you look at the Republican field, the other candidates who are running for president, do you see a figure or two or three who might be able to bring back America?
I think so. If some of them could really also just embrace themselves as well, too. What I see right now in the Republican field is a lot of people who look to be chasing Trump and Trump voters. I'm not sure that's necessarily a winning strategy, because probably as the last time around, Trump always had about 30-35%. It might even be a little bit more now, given that his status as the former president. But those people are very dedicated to him, devoted to him. But that leaves, 60% of the field out there, maybe 65, that is looking for something new. And, I'd like to see some of these guys talk a little bit more about their own views on, where's Ron DeSantis talking about his economic record in Florida? He's spending a lot of time on cultural issues. Those are very divisive. They make people very angry, and maybe they make them motivated. But they're not necessarily the optimistic vision. So, Tim Scott's very optimistic, but he needs a little bit more of a policy agenda. Vivek Ramaswamy, wow, the ideas that come out of that guy, but, I think he's going to have to show that he has a more holistic vision. Mike Pence is in some ways the, classic free market conservatism guy, but he's not the person that gets you very motivated at times. So they're all going to have to come into themselves a little bit more, but I certainly think that there's an opportunity for this to be a real race in the primary.
Kim, one more question. You are a columnist for the Wall Street Journal. Your column Potomac Watch appears every Friday. I think it's essential reading. Everybody should read it, but introduce it to our listeners. What is it? What do you try to do with it every week? Why should our listeners check it out?
Oh, thanks. Yeah. So every Friday, what I try to do is, if you read the editorial columns of the Wall Street Journal, our unsigned editorials, we spend a lot of time there trying to talk about good policy, bad policy, what would really help the country. The idea behind Potomac Watch is to talk about the politics, okay, the sausage making. Why are politicians doing what they're doing? Is it going to work? Can they really sell the public on it? My view is most Americans, they are very busy. They're raising families. They're going to work. They're cutting their yards. They don't have the time to try to untangle what is the mess of Washington, D.C. And the goal of that column is to try to make it a little easier and untangle it for them.
The author is Kimberly Strassel. The book is The Biden Malaise, How America Bounces Back from Joe Biden's Dismal Repeat of the Jimmy Carter Years. Kim, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed this show, please take a minute to leave a review. Your reviews help new listeners discover us, and that helps us keep this show going. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Bookmonger.